Oh, look, I'll bugger that up. We'll do it again for the podcast. Let's first go. Time for some political commentary, and I'll run across to Rod Oram. Hi, Rod Oram, how are you?
Good morning, Mike. Yeah, very well, thank you.
Now, the second bit comes in like this, though.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Did you like my use of the old vernacular there when I said I buggered it up?
Yes. No, I mean, if Toyota can use it in ads, it's okay. And look, it's really nice to be welcomed by a fanfare. It's kind of like the only time in my life that it happens.
Oh, Rod!
It's really wonderful.
Hey, Rod, the wonderful world of politics sure is colourful. What do you think's the number one topic this morning for us to talk about?
Look, I obviously come at this from a particular perspective because I'm sort of completely knee-deep in business issues and economic ones, and particularly the ones around climate change and responses to that, you know, oil and gas, you name it. I'd very happily start there. But if you want to start with the PM or Nikki Hager, wherever, you go right ahead. I'll follow your lead.
Let's start with the PM's visit to Europe. She's glad-handing all the right people, isn't she?
Yes, she is. And there's some serious work to be done there because we're about to start negotiations with the European Union on a free trade agreement. And with the EU in a whole bunch of flux, to be used an appropriate word, because of Britain, it's really important that she has long meetings with the likes of Merkel and Macron, and those seem to have gone very well.
Yeah, it seems that she managed to get that stuff done on top of dealing with the recent Syria, well, at least getting a little bit more informed about what's happening in Syria and with the three eyes of the Five Eyes.
Are
France part of the Five Eyes?
No, they're not.
No, they're not. No.
The Five Eyes all speak English, if you'll pardon the mixed metaphor.
No, because I know she's meeting with the Five Eyes leaders today, isn't she, or representatives from Five Eyes.
Yeah, and so all that is incredibly useful. So it's obviously a very full-on program for her.
The hard task is to actually get these free trade agreements up and running. Yeah, as you say, you come from a business perspective. What makes it so hard? And you know, I heard a story about someone talking about George W. Bush and laughing at our Prime Minister when he mentioned a free trade agreement. At Helen Clark when she mentioned it once, like scoffing at her, like whatever.
Well, yes, because they are immensely difficult because there are so many competing interests, within each country and then between countries. And that's just the bilateral trade agreement. And then when you start to get to a multilateral one, and especially as complex as the EU, it gets intensely complicated. So that's the main issue. The great thing about doing one with the EU is they're at the forefront, there will be some trade benefits, but they're at the forefront of thinking about how do you deal with things, thorny issues like this investor-state dispute settlement stuff. How and when can a company sue if it doesn't like a change of law in a country?
And that's what was really freaking people out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
New Zealand and the TPP, yeah.
Yeah, the US and Europe under the previous president had been negotiating a trade agreement, and Europe took time out because it didn't like ISDS and said, look, we want to come back to the table with a better proposal. And so what they came back with was a semi-judicial arrangement, which makes far more sense, far more structured. So that's the sort of thinking the Europeans do. Unfortunately, that trade agreement in the US didn't progress. It seems even less likely to now with Trump. But these are the sort of people that are really good to have trade agreements with because they're big markets, there's still potential there. But they are deep thinkers about how to move these trade agreements on to better reflect 21st century trading and economic and social and environmental conditions.
Speaking of environmental conditions, let's talk oil and gas then. Let's talk about the response of the public and especially the media to the announcement that there won't be any further oil and gas permits granted for exploration, trying to find oil and gas in New Zealand. Did you think that people reacted to, definitely overreacted to it, but it just proves how uninformed we are about things sometimes?
Again, these are really complicated issues, and so it's a big ask that you'll get a very full and well thought through, researched, well nuanced response. I will say one thing at the outset, though. It wasn't necessary for the government to rush through and say, we're banning all this stuff. It would have been an awful lot better if they said, well, we're not going to do a block offer this year. We might not do one next year. We'll be setting this in the much bigger context of what happens when we get a zero carbon act through Parliament, when we then can set up a climate commission, and when then it can set long-term carbon budgets.
This is right in the middle of everyone going, oh, she's got no spine. Nothing's happening. They're not doing it. The government's not doing anything.
Yeah, no, exactly. However, in contrast to that, there's, you know, tax commissions, there's all sorts of other sort of studies going on.
But that's not a nice, good fix. This fixes that problem, doesn't it? It makes them look like they're really wanting to get the job done before she goes overseas and talks to other countries about climate change.
It was a great message to take overseas. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's seriously upset the oil and gas industry. They would argue that they believe in climate change and want to be part of the solution. That's where it gets more complicated.
If we're in a schoolroom, if we're in a classroom right now, I'd be the one at the back going, oh, shit.
Well, exactly. They want to keep doing what they're doing as long as possible, and they're trying to make the case that what they can do can help.
Rod? I listened to some representatives from the oil and gas industry the day or two after that, and this is why I brought all this up, because I listened to them talking on the radio, another radio station, a different radio station again, and then on the TV, and I thought, you're just a bunch of lying snakes. Listen to you lying and just trying to feather your nest there. It was disgusting. It was like big tobacco. It was disgusting.
They are not making a coherent case. Would be
one of them.
One way of explaining it.
One of them was saying, oh, you know, but the thing is that we get that nice lighter oil from New Zealand, and you know, people around the world don't want to use that heavier oil. They want to use lighter oil. So I mean, we're just gonna cut our nose off. It's like, shut up.
Yeah.
Wow.
But before we even get to the environmental issues, which of course are the most important ones, but let's talk economics, because that's a little bit easier for people to understand.
Yeah.
Where many people's heads are at, especially in business, is that their whole case is based on the idea that there's fabulous geology here. There's going to be enormous gas finds and some, you know, light condensate from that as well, which does have a lower carbon content than some other fuel sources, and therefore that's our contribution to the world. The point is that's completely unproven case. The geology looks.
I know, is that? This will be
pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But the fact is, multinational oil and gas companies, and the big ones who are at the forefront, because they've got the scale, the balance sheets to do this, that go out looking for very big fields, have walked away. Shell just recently has sold out pretty much its last asset in New Zealand. It's exiting after 100 years here, and yet Shell is arguably the best of the integrated oil and gas companies at finding gas. But they're focusing on really big fields and finding those big fields in places that are much easier to do it than New Zealand in terms of geography and geology. The idea that there is some enormous find here that we're just leaving on the table is nuts.
And when we find, it's just going to be a bonus in the pocket of every New Zealander.
Yeah, and unlike other places, we've got options, a lot of energy options. But the point is, the other scare tactic is to say, oh, well, the current gas reserves are going to run out in 11 years' time.
And that's the other one I was going to mention too. Like, I can't believe Simon Bridges pulled that one out of the bag. That just made me, you rookie, I thought to myself.
Yeah, well, he understands this perfectly well, because he's been Minister of Energy in the previous government. 11 years, you know, they're not rushing over themselves to develop new fields. So there's 20 years of gas waiting. They bring them on when they need them. So one of the prospects that New Zealand Oil and Gas talks up, the Bark prospect off Oamaru, Timaru, on the east coast, South Island, that's part of the Clipper prospect, where very substantial gas was found in 30 years ago and was never developed. We're not going to run out of gas. We can all relax about that. And even if we did,
you know, Rod, why is it you're the first person of with some sort of standing and position in that community. I've heard just come out and say that. I can't believe that more of the media didn't just go, hang on, what's he saying that for? why would he say that's ridiculous?
Yes, well, there's a whole bunch.
I love you, Rod Orm. Thanks for coming on our show and giving us the real deal. Yeah.
That's only the start of this, because it goes on from there. Now, a little bit separately from the oil and gas companies themselves is the province of Taranaki. And they, whilst they are very involved in the oil and gas industry, do have an economic development plan that has been trying to develop clean energy sources. So, for example, they proposed to the last government 3 years ago what was at the time called a regional research initiative, I think was the term. It was a Stephen Joyce idea. And they proposed one for clean energy because they are the energy province. And
I love the energy province. Love it.
They never heard back from the government.
Really?
Because they didn't even get to the question stage, let alone the last round. Because the last government only wanted to do oil and gas. It was incredibly focused on that. It was one of its big economic development drivers in 9 years of government, which failed to pay off. There was some nice incremental improvement in oil and gas production. That's fine. But the industry never found the big field that they said the geology was all there for. We just got to go and drill for it and it'll be fine.
And the matter of fact is that because a lot of the talk was here, there was, what was the classic, the barber and the local, the fish and chip shop are all going to suffer. My friend's a cleaner down there. Has she got a job today? That's another thing. It's like, for a start, your job's not going to go straight away. And secondly, it's, if you are relying on the oil and gas industry, you've got to know that at some stage that's going to decline. You've got to.
Yeah.
You know that, because things move forward and life changes, and no matter what your job is, once upon a time, people didn't think computers were going to be important at all, and now they are. Yep. Look at that, Rod.
I'm confident that the people of Taranaki have to get up and go to move their economy on, and
absolutely,
employment and population will grow, and the economy.
And they've got plenty of time to do it. Plenty of time to do it, don't they?
They absolutely do.
Hey, Rod, very quickly, there's the Intelligence and Security Reference Group that's been formed. Why, and what do you think about some of the people that are on it?
Well, the Inspector General of Security Issues says she wanted to be able to stand in the shoes of the public and to better understand these issues in that sort of broader perspective, hence the reference group.
Is it domestic or international, or both?
No, it's the whole intelligence apparatus.
Yep.
And that's a perfectly fine thing to do. Obviously, you'd want some people with some expertise in this area. So there are law professors, there's a barrister, there's the head of Internet New Zealand. There's all sorts of people like that in there. So far, so good. I think it's as well-rounded a group as you'd expect. If you want to have people who have different views but have some knowledge and perspective. And the problem was there's some journalists in there.
I've said before on this show a million times, because I've met and worked with Nicky on quite a few occasions, and he's one of the most honourable, credible people I've ever met. Ever.
Yes.
Ever.
I wholeheartedly endorse that. I would add that he does something incredibly brave and very lonely. To stick his head, it's not his whole head, it's not his head above the parapet, he stands on top of the parapet. Huge admiration for him. So needless to say, there was some pushback, particularly from National, about having somebody like him involved. Well, of course, he had given them a pretty hard time when they were in power.
couple of times.
maybe they just wanted to, exercise their feelings on that a bit. But there would be nobody in the country outside the intelligence sector who probably knows as much about it and how it works. So that's invaluable. I mean, he has experienced that very firsthand in the way the government came after him in deeply intrusive ways, trying to get at the source of
dirty politics.
Absolutely. And so that if we're going to have an open, trusting society, It's really important to include people like that in this sort of group.
Hey, Rod, a great pleasure talking to you once again. We'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thanks. See you, Mike.
Thank you very much. Rod Oram.